it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hey folks, welcome into On to Waveland. This is the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney, and it's been a minute. We haven't gotten together, guys, to talk a bit. We had intended for this offseason, we sort of don't so much have a regular publishing schedule as when things happen. It's like, all right, cool, let's convene and talk about that. And obviously, over the past week, despite a slow-moving offseason around baseball, it was a very huge, maybe not totally shocking, but a momentous week for the Cubs as they will transition from Theo Epstein as the president of baseball operations. His last day was Friday, and Jed Hoyer gets the bump from GM to president, and he had his sort of introductory slash, you know, I'm the captain now, here's my intro to the offseason press conference on Monday. And you guys were there, I mean, digitally, but let's we can circle back to Theo related stuff maybe at the end, but obviously that Jed presser is fresh on our minds. It leads into this this offseason that's very important for the Cubs and may be surprising in a number of regards. And so I don't know, I'll throw it to you guys to discuss your impressions from that press conference, and then we'll take it from there.
Yeah, first of all, for me, I think it's the first moment we're seeing Jed in charge, right? Jed's the guy, and maybe I'm starting, I looking at him differently as far as how he handles us now, and he's probably always been like this, but his answers just, I remember maybe it was the first or second answer, I was like, that's it? I'm used to Jed Theo going for like 2 minutes on a question like that. And Jed had, you know, a couple sentences and he was good. That's all he was giving us. And that's, it's not that it was bad. It's just, you get so used to Theo being, giving the answer and so much more. And then it's like, when I say so much more, sometimes it's not even a ton of substance, right? It's just there. There's just a lot there, and you can break it down however you want to and use it in different ways. But Jed is either like, yeah, I'm not going to go there. And when he says I'm not going to go there, that's the end. Because Theo will even say that. Theo would say that where, yeah, I don't really want to touch on that. But, and then he'll do something like adjacent to that that still helps you out in some way. Jed wasn't playing that, and Jed's just pretty straightforward, and if he doesn't want to touch a subject, he's not going to touch it at all. I came away, I would say I've been looking at this offseason as, yes, it's a very complicated one, and things don't look great as far as the immediate future, and how to kind of extend this window is going to be hard. I came away even feeling even more like, oof, this is going to be really dark in a sense. It feels like this offseason is a tough one in general for teams across baseball. I'm struggling to find a reason to be like, yeah, 2021 should be a solid season for the Cubs, and I can see how they can really extend this and make it a bright future beyond that. There's ways to do one or the other, I think. More likely the latter as far as extending things and making things look better beyond 2021, but I don't know how you balance both. And I came away thinking about that Theo's initial presser where he talked about dual tracks and, you know, we can do both. We can rebuild the farm system and win. And it just wasn't, I don't know if it wasn't true, but it wasn't realistic. I don't see how Jed can do both. And I think we're headed towards a tough 2021 at minimum.
I was struck by Brett, who was kind of real-time tweeting this and then wrote about it on Bleacher Nation, just this idea of, like, there's not one, like, takeaway quote that you put in all caps that says everything about the Cubs. It was more just the tone, the kind of the things left unsaid. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out how much of that is, look, we didn't expect anything like great. There was going to be no fireworks after. I mean, look at how they were operating in the best of times when, you know, the Daniel Descalso contract that we'll be referencing for years is the biggest outlay. They laid off more than 100 people in the organization. Tom Ricketts has told ESPN these are biblical losses, and the Cubs are claiming, I think, $140 million loss, net loss this year. So, like, that was kind of what our expectations were, and I do think it'll be interesting to kind of figure out Jed as the number one executive, because I do think some of this is just how Jed is wired. He's been known as, he's great at these GM meetings that we cover for all these national writers or the writers from Boston, from San Diego, who want like a quote on like the state of baseball, or like a quote about a guy that Jed used to work with, or any big picture idea. But there are lots of times over the last 9 years we've known him where if you get too specific about something that's kind of still in play, he clams up immediately. And I'm not sure how much of it was just who he is. Maybe the fact that, you know, it was his first press conference and the boss is there on the Zoom and you don't want to just kind of immediately tell the world that Chris Bryant is on the trade block, even though everyone knows that's the case. But yeah, I mean, the Theo's first presser was this kind of like celebration about renewal and hope. And this was very 2020, on brand for 2020, I'd say.
Yeah, I think that you nailed it there, Patrick. I mean, I guess you nailed it that I nailed it. So kudos to you for appropriately acknowledging me nailing it. But it was, you know, all the right things were said about the idea of, like, you know, it almost, it was missing that every season is sacred line. Remember that one?
Yeah.
but it definitely, it almost would be like the t-shirt version of that now. Well, every season is sacred, but I just felt like everything could have had but after it. And it is absolutely true that the NL Central in 2021 is going to be wide open. I don't envision a scenario where any of the five teams leaves this offseason looking like, holy crap, that's just a dominant team, so you can't compete. But at the same time, see, there's that but. You know, Jed did circle back to that longer term view several times. And he, you know, he phrased it in a way that's open-ended and non-specific. But he said multiple times that the eye maybe now is a little bit more on the long term. And what I didn't get from that, you know, in the last 3 years, we've obviously talked about this idea of threading the needle. It was a buzz phrase that they had offered, that idea that you can still be good in the near term while simultaneously making opportunistic moves to improve for the long term. Maybe that don't hurt you too much in the short term so you can still compete. What I didn't get the sense was that this time, I don't know. We joked earlier when we were podcasting a couple months ago about the idea that they talk the talk at the end of the season about not running it back, just running it back, about trying to do these various things. And then ultimately they've run it back a couple years in a row after disappointing seasons. This time, I don't know, you could take this hopefully or negatively as you want, but in addition to the overall vibe of feeling like, oh my, there's going to be some payroll slashing, I also got the vibe that, no, seriously, this time I think you're going to find that there will be substantial changes to the roster. It just isn't necessarily going to be with an eye toward putting the foot down toward 2021. I felt like it was more about, look, we've got to do some reality check things that will necessarily involve chopping off some payroll. And if it can help for the long term, great, cool, awesome. But really the focus is going to be just setting our feet underneath us next year. And, you know, maybe they can still flip a coin and compete in 2021 because the NL Central is going to be shitty. But it didn't feel to me like a situation where in the past they talked big about wanting to make substantial changes and then didn't. This felt like talking almost like, yeah, this is where I wanted to go with this. Talking almost like shyly, disappointedly about like, yeah, we got to make some changes and it ain't going to be good.
Yes. Yeah, no, I can see that. I mean, that's, yeah, that's how I've come away feeling that they're looking at things now, that it's almost as if really hard decisions need to be made and they're not going to be fun decisions. That's why, I mean, I started off, that's why my piece about Jed is basically like, he's got, like, his first moves, like, are kind of oversized as far as how much they're going to impact the rest of his tenure, right? I mean, maybe I'm completely wrong on that. Maybe whatever they get, or, you know, whatever little or a lot they get for Bryant really won't be that significant, right? And maybe Bryant really is going to be on and off the IL for much of his career, and he just doesn't have that impact offense left in his career, right? So maybe that's not a significant move, but it feels like what you do with Bryant right now can set the course for the next 5 years and really help you determine how things go. And that just feels like when I focus just on that move alone, it doesn't lead to a positive place for the Cubs, right? Like, how can you possibly swing this transaction, whatever it may be with Bryant, into something that's a net positive over the next half decade for this team? And I'm struggling to find a good answer that's realistic, right? You look at the possible trade candidates as far as teams that you could link up with Bryant, and it's what, the Nationals, the Red Sox, maybe the Dodgers, maybe the Braves, the Mets. How many of those teams outside of the Braves and Dodgers, who aren't going to likely be aggressively pursuing Bryant, can even offer something that would be like, yeah, that's a great package. Yeah, that's something that really intrigues you, right? So, I mean, that's what you're working with just from the start. And the second part is, like, Bryant just isn't going to net that much right now in today's game, the way things work. It's just, overall, baseball's in a tough place. The Cubs just feel like they're really, I want to say that the Cubs aren't a bad team, right? They just won their division. You look at the talent, and Jed said this, they're good enough to win their division again just on talent alone. But for some reason, it just doesn't feel like the arrow can be pointing up or even sideways for this group right now. And it's what we've talked about for months and years now, right? All these guys coming up on their contracts and just the lack of impact talent at the upper levels of the minor league system. So it just feels like this transition isn't going to be a smooth one, in the sense that, what did Ricketts say? I think it was either Ricketts or Theo via Ricketts basically saying, we don't want to be a team that has to kind of reset every couple of years. We're going to be a team that competes year in and year out, right? I don't know how you pull that off right now. Maybe that's the long-term plan. That was obviously the original plan 9 years ago, and they didn't nail it as they had hoped. I struggle to see how the Cubs aren't headed towards a down period, and not just like a... I'm talking about a down period that kind of looks like what the Red Sox were if they hadn't won that one Ben Cherington World Series in 2013. There were a few years of bad Red Sox teams, right? And are the Cubs headed for that? I don't know how bad it gets. When we talk about threading the needle, and when you talk about the moves that need to be made and how you do this, it just seems like a near impossible task.
I don't know. Maybe I'm naive, but I don't know. It doesn't have to be like rock bottom here. Like I know it's going to be tough for Jed, but I'm just wondering how much they can just kind of, I don't know, not put their foot on the accelerator and ease up a bit. And maybe it's just about giving opportunities, whether it's to Alec Mills or Robert Azulay. If you trade Wilson Contreras, who should probably bring in a better haul than what Sahadev outlined for Chris Bryant, is that enough to kind of disrupt the group, or, you know, kind of change the mix? Do you believe in this pinching infrastructure and, you know, think you can kind of get more out of this, and maybe hit on, you know, on a ton of free agents who are going to be looking for jobs in February. I just think there's almost no margin for error here. I think, you know, the team that shows up to Mesa, whenever that is, hopefully it's February, you know, maybe is kind of like an 85 win team and everything has to kind of break right. And everyone knows that there's going to be a huge sell off at the trade deadline if things don't go well. But I don't know if you're a Cubs fan, if they trade Wilson, extend one of Javi or Rizzo, if they have enough in there to essentially do what they did last winter, you know, I don't know. I don't think they have to absolutely crash. I think that's what ownership has told Jed. I think he understands that. I don't think we're not going to have another 2012 where they're going to expect to lose 100 games. I think it's just kind of, they're going to pass. They're not going to be trading prospects the way they did under Theo. And they're not going to kind of sign a Craig Kimbrell, you know, a closer to a huge deal like that. And I think this transition, as we've talked about before, started when they overhauled scouting and player development and brought in David Ross and reshaped the coaching staff. And these changes, it's not like Theo quit and then all of a sudden the Cubs realize, oh, we got to, you know, mix things up here. I mean, this has been going on for well over a year now.
Yeah, I think a lot of what we're circling here and maybe saying it in different ways, and again, neither Tom Ricketts nor Jed Hoyer were going to say it explicitly, but I feel, you know, it was a rumored report out there last week, and with apologies, I can't recall who had this phrasing, but it's really stuck with me, and it's this idea of a, quote, heavy restart. Yeah, that's some wordsmithing. That's some playing with ideas, but the reason it works for me is because precisely what you guys are saying, the Cubs are not in a situation where a total sell-off teardown is either warranted or even necessarily the right idea, both because the near-term competitiveness is possible, even as you restart, but also because I'm not sure that they've got the pieces to really generate the kind of substantial value where it's worth tearing down for a couple of years and dealing with that. Moreover, they're also not in a spot where they could move just one or two pieces, the guys they kind of want to move anyway, and get substantial value. Like, if you only find what you can get for Chris Bryant right now, and maybe also Kyle Schwarber, you're not getting a lot in return. That is not fundamentally changing your long-term organizational outlook. It might ding you in 2021, but it's really not going to change things for the long term. And so, to me, it's never made a lot of sense to go that route. It even as I say, it doesn't make sense to do a total teardown. That makes more sense than sort of like not doing anything. And so, to that end, that's why this is sort of, I don't know, not quite a total rebuild, but a pretty substantial maneuvering of the roster this year, where you do consider moving a Chris Bryant and a Kyle Schwarber and maybe a couple longer-term valuable pieces at the height of their value, with an eye specifically toward a reset in 2022. Because you do have a couple things working. I know fans always want that, right? You want as short a rebuild as possible. But I do think the Cubs have a couple things working for them that does make sense. The pieces that they might move might be able to generate them value in 2022 and beyond, if not 2021. Financially, the Cubs should be in a much better place after this coming season than they are right now. The market should be in a fundamentally different place next year. And lastly, my brain is just a disaster today. I keep having these. I'm so sorry, guys. You can leave this in the podcast. Folks can be listening. They'll be like, I don't know what's wrong with Brett today. All right. Moreover, you do have a free agent market next year and the year after that do project to be pretty attractive and compelling. And I'm not saying you compete on the back of free agency alone, but if the Cubs were in a position where they didn't completely tear down, but they kind of took a step back this year, that the free agent market the next 2 years is going to be in a position to supplement very strongly if you have put yourself in a position financially to do that. And so there are a lot of reasons why, to me, this idea of a heavy restart, which is like, again, something less than a total sell-off teardown, but something quite a bit more than just, let's move the one or two guys we want to move anyway and then just, see what happens. It's very compelling to me. And that does feel to me consistent with this, the vibe I was getting from that press conference yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to, if that's the definition of a heavy restart, I guess I can.
It is. Everybody knows that's
one it. Man's heavy restart is another man's significant retooling. I think that was thrown out there yesterday on the Zoom.
Significant retooling. That's a good one. We could do an entire 15-minute set on just all of the euphemisms for what we're trying to describe.
Yeah, significant retooling was another one. I mean, whatever you want to call it. Yes, I think there's a way. The ultimate. I agree with you. I like the point about the potential for finances for this team to once again be a player in free agency, right? It has been a long time. I mean, when I say long time, it's been a few years for a team that we viewed coming into this window of contention as this is a financial powerhouse, right? That's what we were thinking they could become or be. To go this many off seasons, this will be the third straight off season where we're, in all likelihood, we're going to look back after this off season and say three off seasons now, biggest free agent signing is Daniel Descalzo, right? I mean, who's going to bet against that right now? Does anyone want to come out? Do either of you want to say, no, I think they're going to sign a bigger free agent this winter? I'm not ready to say that. So that's concerning to me. I guess my point is they damn well better be spending in one of those next few off seasons, right? This is the Chicago Cubs. I understand we're in a very unique situation this winter, but I'm saying going forward, unless things somehow take a turn for the worse in this country, they have to be spending. It is absolutely imperative for this team to be a player in free agency for significant free agents going forward. I'm not saying that's their only route to success, but that's how you build teams. That's how you build a better team, unless you start nailing some big trades. But I mean, they need to be a player in free agency again. They need to nail some of these moves. I think they also need to get creative. We talk about trading Wilson Contreras. I don't think it's ridiculous to suggest, and I haven't heard this. This is just me trying to think outside the box. When you hear that the Tampa Bay Rays are looking for a catcher, they don't want an expensive catcher, right? They don't want someone near free agency. That's not how the Rays do things. Does a challenge trade with the Rays make sense? Are they interested in Miguel Amaya, and can you get a AAA pitcher where they're just stocked with pitching? Every pitcher that they bring up is impact level. Or can you trade for a pitcher that, you know, maybe entering his expensive years, quote unquote, and move Miguel Amaya for him? Again, just totally speculating and trying to think outside the box of how you can create a team that wins and also, you know, doesn't completely fall off a cliff in 2021, but also it looks better for the future. That's what they're going to have to do, right? And then what Patrick said about they have to look on the margins too. They have to hit on the small signings. They have to find the next Jason Adam. They need to make sure that, you know, the pitching development infrastructure is effective and more pitchers like Adbert Alzolay emerge, right? More guys that have the talent but haven't quite put it together start putting it together. I don't want to make it too gloom and doom, because I do think that when you talk about Alzolay, when you talk about Mills, that's not a terrible back of the rotation. If that's your four and five, if you can find a three, I don't think that's terrible. It's about depth and
how are you finding that three, though?
Yeah, no, you're right.
I don't mean to jump in.
No, you're 100%
I appreciate
right.
Where you're going, But it is, yeah, it's like, wait a minute, if they're not going to spend any money, they don't have any pieces that are really going to generate that value in trade if they didn't. It's like, they're not finding a three. There is no three that they're, you know.
You're right. In all likelihood, they can't just, I mean, I guess the best case scenario is Alzolay's that three, right? I'm high on Alzolay right now because there were real changes and adjustments made. It's about staying healthy and consistent, right? So I want to see it over more than whatever it was, two starts that he did it, or two outings, I guess, that he did it. But that's a guy that looks all of a sudden like, hey, the pitching development isn't as terrible as we thought, right? And maybe this new pitching development is working. Who knows? You know, one point of evidence there, one point of evidence with Jason Adam, and plenty of other points of evidence that frustrate Cubs fans. So I don't want to jump too far ahead there. But yeah, there's little bits of things that make you say, okay, there's pieces here and there. But it just really gets – they have to – I guess ultimately what I'm saying is – the moves that are going to work, the moves that may end up making this look better in the long run are not ones that are obvious right now to any of us, I don't think. And I also don't think when they happen, we'll be too aware of them as being, wow, that actually turned out to be a really significant move, right? I think for this to work, there are going to have to be some things where we look back a year, 2 years, whatever, and say, they were right on that. They nailed that, and nobody realized what kind of value they were getting in that trade. So ultimately what I'm saying is they're going to have to surprise us a little bit, right? They're going to have to show us that all these changes that, you know, Jed Hoyer has learned a lot over these nearly two decades of being by Theo Epstein's side, that the changes that they made to everything from player development to amateur scouting, they nailed, that R&D really has grown and become this powerhouse department for the Cubs. I mean, that's all these things that are going on behind the scenes. We're going to need to see it pay off.
Yeah, it's definitely time to think outside the box and maybe like find some guys who used to play for the Red Sox or couldn't make the Padres bullpen. Just really kind of bold and innovative stuff for the Cubs. But I kid, because I do think Jed Hoyer has an advantage in that. Look, I think it'd be really hard to come in right now and replace a legend and get a feel for a staff that has just been decimated by layoffs or kind of understand the politics and the culture of the business side in the middle of a pandemic when the Wrigley office is closed. And I do think Jed's institutional knowledge will really benefit him here, because I don't know. I mean, the Ricketts ownership group is good in that from Theo's perspectives or Jed's perspective is they just say, here's money. You do with it what you want. You know, Tom Ricketts isn't like, hey, I got this friend in Arizona who should really manage our baseball team. We're going to hire him. That he just kind of lets them do whatever they want. And, you know, that makes sense. The only issue here is they've got to be thinking like, dude, you can't tear this down right now. Like, we're going to open up Wrigley Field and be like, we just traded all of our best players. Well, we haven't signed any free agents. We have this network that had a really rocky launch in year one, and like, who's going to tune in for year two? So I think I think that's a, you know, fascinating aspect of this. It just is kind of like beneath the surface, and not to diminish Jed's kind of stature within your organization, but Theo, you know, right or wrong, you know, he wasn't perfect, but he had an absolute presence. Like, what Theo said carried a ton of weight, you know, inside and outside the organization. And for Jed, as someone who is widely respected, certainly trusted, accomplished, experienced, all of those things, it's just different being the number one guy and how he navigates that and how they work together to get this thing back up and running. I mean, they're kind of really pinning their hopes here on, you know, like everyone else, you know, great news on the vaccine front and kind of therapeutics and a, you know, comprehensive testing system to where things can get, you know, get back up and running to where they were before.
I think that's all a really good point, and that ties to a really good question that you asked yesterday, Patrick, of Tom Ricketts. And it it was interesting to me because he actually said quite a bit more than I would have expected. When you asked in relation to kind of all this stuff we've been talking about on this episode, you led Tom Ricketts toward the question of, look, you know, fans probably gonna be coming back. You want to have a good product for them. Does that factor into things? And, you know, and but if Jed wanted to tear things down, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Great question. I love to think about that potential interplay between the realities of the business side and the competitiveness on the baseball side. And how do you navigate those things when you don't want to tell your baseball guys what to do? And Ricketts initially said exactly what I would have expected, which is like, look, you know, Jed's the guy. I don't interfere with that stuff. And I do believe that that's been the case with the Ricketts family, that they have not really stepped on any toes on the baseball side. But then Ricketts added, well, I don't think anybody's talking about tearing anything down. We have a good team. We're looking to be competitive. That surprised me that he added that, because he very easily could have left it at, well, I defer to my baseball guys, period, full stop. Was I alone in feeling like that was a contemplative pushback, to what was embedded in your question, Mooney, that like, in a way he was almost answering your question with a, yeah, we're going to try to be competitive next year because we do have those, other factors in mind, that we want to be competitive next year. We are hoping fans can come back. We have a new network that's launched. So I don't think anybody's thinking of tearing anything down. I mean, how could he say that, right? Without having those conversations with Jed. It just really stood out to me. I just am not used to Ricketts even commenting at all on sort of a baseball operations side of things. Am I the only one to whom that kind of jumped out a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely... My ears perked up when he specifically said, I don't think anybody's talking about a rebuild, right? And I assume, Jed didn't Jed isn't just now sitting down to break down the roster. He's like, oh, I'm team president now, better get on this and start having discussions, right? I assume they're all...
By the way, Tom.
they've had discussions throughout. I mean, part of the reason I think Theo stepped away is because they were having those discussions. What do we need to do? What's the task at hand? How do we see it best? What's the best path to take and how do we get there? Not just like what's the best path to take as far as leadership, but for the organization, right? What does this team need now? What are the moves that need to be made? Those discussions were happening as they tried to figure out what Theo's role would be going forward. Is he staying or not, right? And I think when they realized how big of a task it was, I think that's what was all being hashed out, right? So he should know. I think he should have a pretty strong idea of the direction Jed wants and the options that Jed has laid out and the ideas that he may have, at least in general, right? So I think there was some truth to that, and I do think it was significant. And I do wonder, now that you pose it, like how much of that is based on the points Patrick made, right? How much of that is based on just pure baseball stuff that Jed may, you know, like pure baseball wise, does Jed see this and say, you know what, the best thing is a teardown? And while they were having the discussion, they're like, you got to factor in marquee, you got to factor in we have fans coming in and we need to put out a product to make them interested in coming back to Wrigley. All these things are going on. We can't do this rebuild, and just Ricketts' general desire to not go through that again. Like, we've heard him say this, I don't want to go through a rebuild again. So I do wonder if there's pushback from ownership on that. It's impossible to know for sure, just based on that answer, but Brett bringing it up does make me start thinking about it.
I actually thought it was a moment that stood out to me. It was like, for Ricketts, roughly 90 seconds into this, talking about the redesign of our scouting and player development departments last year. And for kind of canned prepared remarks, I thought that was somewhat revealing and speaks to what we've talked before. I believe Sahade brought it up several episodes ago of like how this is viewed internally is that it's not just before and after Theo. It's kind of the stuff that they had done after the 2019 season, all of the conversations and kind of breakdowns that led to that, of why they needed to overhaul some stuff on the amateur scouting side, in the draft room, technology, player development, kind of finding better connectors to make all these things run. And I do think that, I guess nothing exists in a vacuum, right? But Ricketts a lot of the time kind of speaks common sense and kind of advocates for things that I think Cubs fans for years kind of wanted. Now, it's kind of impossible to separate that because of all of the complications surrounding his family, all of the history we've seen over the last decade of getting Wrigley renovated and stuff like that. But I do think, you know, when they took over, you know, it was like the Phillies had just won World Series, and like, you know, the Tigers were kind of in the middle of their run. And, you know, we really haven't heard from those teams in a really long time. And I think there is a genuine desire to avoid just totally bottoming out, which I think is good from a fan's perspective. I think it's also hard, though, for Cubs fans to read about, you know, potentially $100 million in historic tax credits and Ricketts saying, no, I mean, that's part of the stadium financing plan. You know, that's not a part of it. And so I think all these things are kind of swirling about, and that's why, you know, Jed Hoyer has a difficult job, a great job. There's only like 30 of these, you know, in the world, but however they sort this out, it's not going to be easy, and it's going to be, you know, kind of great entertainment for us trying to figure out, you know, what's going on.
All right, concluding thing then, to try to bring it back, this has been good combo using the Theo presser, the Jed presser, to kind of talk about the offseason as a whole and even some longer term stuff than that. But let's bring in near term, because folks will be wondering about this, and you asked about it very pointedly, Sahadev, and it's this. In 9 days is the tender deadline for arbitration eligible players. Famously, the Cubs have Chris Bryant, Javi Baez, Kyle Schwarber, among others, to whom they can but do not have to tender a contract for next year, to which a certain arbitration salary will be attached. And you essentially asked, you know, I don't know if you mentioned Chris Bryant by name, but it sure sort of felt like Chris Bryant was the thrust of the question. You know, you gave Jed the opportunity to rule out the possibility of a non-tender for a star like Chris Bryant, and he declined. He almost just flatly said, yeah, I decline to comment on that. You wrote about it, fantastic piece at The Athletic. Check it out, folks. But did you have anything else you wanted to say about that? Was that an answer that you expected? I know you mentioned this earlier in the pod with like Theo, or maybe that was you, Mooney, that said it, but Theo would sometimes give you that flat response and then add a little bit of color and context for you to work with. Whereas Jed, it was just like a, nah, not going to talk about that. How did that strike you?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't specifically ask about Bryant, so I don't want to say that he was directly responding to a Bryant question, but I do think it matters. I do think if you're going to non-tender any of those guys, I don't care if it's Kyle Schwarber. If people think Kyle Schwarber is no good, I don't agree with that assessment of Kyle Schwarber. And I also think non-tendering a player like Kyle Schwarber would be a foolish move as well. But yes, I came away from that thinking, like, if any of this stuff is on the table, that's really, like, I don't care if there's a 1% chance. That's bad. These things should not be on the table. I understand we're in a terrible place as far as finances go and where baseball is and how many people are losing their jobs. All those things, I'm well aware. Believe me, I've had friends that have lost jobs. It sucks. But it's just such, it sends such a terrible signal to your fans, to everyone. It's a terrible way for if it's on the table and if something like that were to happen, that would be the worst way for Jed Hoyer to start his tenure as team president. First of all, it'd be a I don't care about the criticisms for Chris Bryant. I'm not interested in relitigating whether he's great or average or bad. It would be a terrible end to his tenure. And it would just thinking about the fact that they gamed his service time to get that extra year, and now they're searching for a way to get out of it. that last year is suddenly like, what do we do with this? Instead of, hey, we got an extra year of Chris Bryant that we manipulated to get. How awesome is this? Former MVP, you know. It just really feels like it puts the exclamation point on how difficult of a task Jed Hoyer is faced with. And it really, and just the idea to me that it's an option is a very bad look. And if it ever were to happen, it would be one of the most embarrassing moves for an organization to ever pull off. I don't see how you could argue that it's not embarrassing. And just it would be shocking and embarrassing for a team to do that. I think it's a complete waste of, I don't like calling players assets, so I'm not going to call him an asset, but it's a complete waste of Chris Bryant and the value that he provides. Again, not interested in relitigating Bryant's value. I think we all agree that he's pretty valuable as a player when he's healthy, but it just seems like such a bad place to start things off with. I don't think it'll happen. I want to emphasize that. I think I wrote that. It's the least likely scenario. I think there's a very, very, very small chance. When people say there's a 0% chance, I can just tell you that they're wrong, and that the fact that they're wrong bothers me.
I just like seeing Sadev get so fired up. Like, I was like, that's, yeah, I can't really.
I know, it's great. And I was going to, so I have a good I have a good wrap from that, which is, loved Sahadev's take there. All that is spot on. And I think that to leave people with that on a more positive note, if you are, this isn't quite conspiracy theory level thinking, but it is sort of like some galaxy brain trade rumor thinking. Okay. So I'm going to leave you folks with this. Maybe everything Sahadev said is correct. Or maybe Jed is like some serious 3D chess thinking, and it's this. If he says today, oh yeah, we're definitely, and again, Jed was not specifically asked or talking about Chris Bryant, but we're going to imagine that he was talking about Chris Bryant. If Jed says today, oh yeah, we're definitely tendering Chris Bryant, duh, look at Sahadev's face. He'd be so pissed if we didn't tender him. We're going to tender him. There'd be all these amazing screenshots of Sahadev's angry face floating around the internet if we didn't. So, of course, we're going to tender him. Here's what the Cubs lose by saying that, okay? It's not a lot, but if they were engaged in trade talks with multiple teams on December 1st who already knew, oh yeah, the Cubs are definitely going to tender, then what Jed wouldn't be able to do is say, hey guys, here's the deal. We don't think we can tender Chris Bryant, okay? So we got to trade him today. And so if you don't come to us with the deal now, we got to non-tender him, and then he's a free agent. He can sign with anybody. You're not going to get him. So you need to jump on this now. Now, this only works if you believe that Chris Bryant's trade value is almost nothing, which we can get into that. I tend to think it is pretty close to very, very small. And so you preserve, in that case, you preserve a tiny bit of leverage, the leverage of free agency, that if you don't trade for him now, he's going to become a free agent and you don't get him. So by leaving it ambiguous and open, Jed preserves that tiny little threat of, oh yeah, we might not tender him. So there you go. You guys can leave it and ponder those possibilities. And I can't tell from Sadev's, you know, furrowed expression if he's like, man, that is some bullshit.
I get where you're coming from. I just think it is.
It's true. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's a bit galaxy brain. And it basically what you're saying is you're getting a non prospect for Chris Bryant. Like,
yeah,
that's
we could get into that. I don't think you're getting you're not getting an impact prospect.
Prospect, but like you're leveraging that. If that's your leverage, you're basically saying,
I know that's giving yes.
Like
all the leverages, you get him before anyone else can get him, but it's approximately market price. And there's, you know,
yeah, it would have to be like, I mean, what would be the return? I mean, the return would be so minimal. It would be like insignificant.
I mean, I'm publicly declared as, I think the Cubs can and should target sort of some post-hype guys that you know, think about, like, I think a Jake Arrieta type. Not, of course, the results of Jake Arrieta, but that type of a guy who's come up, was hyped, has the talent, but has sort of started to flame out. Because I think you can sell that trade a little easier to fans. and you might end up getting more value than getting a C plus prospect.
Yeah. Out of it. And I agree with that. And I think that's a realistic scenario and probably a smart way to kind of go about it. But I also think that if you're going about it with the leverage situation that you just brought about, then you're not getting even that. You're getting one of like some low A guy that has a ceiling of like maybe is a, you know, 25th man on the roster someday. That's how I view it. A non-prospect, yeah. Essentially.
Yeah. I mean, we're in degrees of separation there. I basically agree with you. You did a good job bringing everybody back down. Like I had tried to wrap this in a nice place. You know, look, we haven't talked to our wonderful listeners in a while. So I was trying to like leave a happy spot and then you just had to
Accept any decisions being made of money where money trumps winning. It frustrates me. I don't like that. And I don't think fans should ever accept it.
See, I root for money, so I can't relate. I hope the Cubs are the financial champions of 2021, and we will look forward to deconstructing that all year long. Thank you, folks, for listening. Make sure you are subscribing. This is On to Waveland. You can get us anywhere you get your podcasts. You can tell your friends over Thanksgiving. Perhaps you can, on your Thanksgiving Zooms, you can tell them about this great, uplifting Cubs podcast you heard on The Athletic. That's Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Read their great stuff at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor. You can read my stuff at Bleacher Nation. And we will see you again soon when there is good and lovely Cubs stuff to discuss, which, I mean, news is coming one way or another. December 2nd, tender deadline. Stay tuned. Peace.